Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? It's Mike from the Sneaker History Podcast. And of course, you guys know from running a solo show, that means we are doing a Coffee Time Kicks. And I have a very special guest. Someone, I mean, he doesn't know this yet, but I think he may be the reason that I buy too many Sauconys because his designs are absolutely fantastic. But I got the, let me make sure I get your title right, Senior Lead Design at Saucony. I got Josh Frazier. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing fantastic, man. Happy to have you on the show. One of my favorite sneaker brands, so it's a really kind of, you know, geeking out, being able to sit and kind of pick your brain and kind of understand what you do, some of your projects you've worked on, because, I mean, you, your team out there is all going to have done some absolutely fantastic sneakers, whether it be in lines or collaborations. I think one of the few brands out there that can make both speak to the individual consumer. So I really just, again, if I nerd out on you, listeners, you just bear with me.
Super nice of you to say that. Thank you so much for inviting me. I've been in Saucony like 10 years now.
Okay.
So that kind of surprised me the other day when I thought about it. I was like, how long have I been there? So, I started in 2016. I had actually come from Puma. Before that, and I was there for about 8 years. And then before that, I was in Hong Kong with doing my own consultancy with some coworkers that I had worked with while I was at Reebok.
Oh, cool.
And so previous to that, I was in Tokyo, Japan. I opened up the RDST, which was the Reebok Design Studio. That was way back in 2003.
Man.
So, yeah, I'm been around a little while. But I was with Reebok 16 years.
Okay. Wow. Okay. You've been in this game for a while then, sir.
Oh, it was even farther back, man. I'm really gonna show my age. My mom was actually the third employee at Reebok.
Are you serious?
So
that's so made, sneakers made, in the blood, man. It's in the blood.
That's, yeah, yeah. So
well, it's, you know, it's funny because so I just did an interview with Ben Weiss over at Scintillate, and one of his advisors is Joe Foster.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's crazy that you say that, you know, hey, the third employee?
So my mom started at Reebok in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, I was 5 years old, but she used to bring me into the office, and so she actually knew the Fosters.
Oh, okay.
And she was Paul Fireman's executive assistant.
Okay.
So we're talking, I think this was in Hingham, Massachusetts, by a building 19 in, like, you know, back building with, like, we had the office and we also had, like, the distribution center there. So mm-hmm. It was, like, really small, you know. So, I mean, we're talking 20 employees.
Yeah.
But that's where a lot of the original sneakers had been designed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Aztrek and stuff when Paul had purchased the company from the Fosters. So, that was an amazing time. I mean, I got to watch the designers there, like Juan Diaz and Paul Brown and mm-hmm. a lot of the really early OG guys that, you know,
yeah.
probably don't hear about as much, but they're the ones that kind of paved the way in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with that brand. I mean, literally grew up with it. And I worked there as an intern.
Okay.
I started around 91. So okay. I was working in the design department. Originally, I'd actually just been doing a summer internship as a working in the fax department in the mailroom.
Always so starts in the mailroom.
but get this. Todd Krinsky, who's the CEO, he and I worked in the mailroom at the same time.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What are the odds of that?
Pretty funny.
That is cool, man.
But yeah, so I mean, I grew up around footwear pretty much all of my life. I watched some pretty amazing designs get made throughout the years. especially, you know, the late 80s and early 90s. I mean, I got to see the Alien Stomper created from scratch. Tuan Lee was like one of my mentors, like growing up.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, I got to watch masters at work like Steve Smith, and I get to see the Fury being made. I mean, I was a colorist at the time. I just started working as a summer intern doing, you know, back in the day, we didn't have computers. I mean, we had them, but they were like, you know, the Apple II.
DOS systems.
And right, we weren't doing tech packs on Macs.
Yeah.
So a lot of the stuff was done by hand, you know, the really blueprints cool. And the colorway is all done by marker. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be pretty high on marker fumes by the end of the day. Everything was like spray booths and like just hands-on kind of, you know, old school analog. And that was the way it was back then. Yeah. So,
do you ever find yourself, I mean, now with all the computers and programs, you still find yourself just kind of like, you know what, maybe I want to do this by hand sometimes just to kind of get a feeling for it?
You do both. You know, yeah. I went to school. I didn't go to school for footwear design or even product design in general. I went as an illustrator / painter.
Okay.
So I went to RISD in the late 90s, and that was just – I was interning – as well and working there at Reebok for probably about 6 years before they hired me full time.
Okay. Okay.
So I got out of RISD and then 97, 98 started full time doing, you know, as an entry level footwear designer, and then met some amazing people there. Scott Hewitt and, you know, a lot of these other guys. I mean, you know, the Iverson and like all that stuff was being designed at the time. E. Scott Morris was another, you know, big influence. I mean, he was one of the first guys that started bringing in like comic book illustration and storyboarding, you know, into the early days of, you know, design presentations. There was just a ton of people, you know, that you could really learn from. And yeah, it was a perfect combination of like old school skill and the emerging technology that was happening with the computers at the time. You know, it's amazing. I mean, you look at a lot of the classic shoes from that period, and I remember when they were literally, it's making me feel a little old, but you know, it was a great time. I mean, it was like, you look back on it and it was like kind of a golden era during the 90s. Reebok was doing really well, you know, before Nike had really kind of blown up.
Most definitely. Like, Reebok was that brand because at that point it was the aerobics, the gym kind of culture that was really the big thing.
Right.
And I mean, I feel like they're, in my mind, I think they're doing a pretty solid job of trying to, you know, ramping up in a sense of a word, comeback. They're doing some different things out there.
For sure.
But just thinking back, because you, like, starting from when you started to, you know, where you are now, what did that look like when, like, those programs came in? Like, you have your Photoshops, your Illustrators, and God knows the other programs you guys use for just purely design. Is it like, hey, we're bringing this in, we're going to spend a month learning it, and we're going to get back to it, or are you guys trying to do it on the fly?
You know, it was a little bit of both, and I think a lot of, you know, I'd say for the most part, most engineers probably don't use Mac. You know, they tend to shy away from that. I'd say when you're using Adobe, like, for the most part, footwear designers and apparel designers are using Mac product. And for sure, I mean, I remember the first time I used Illustrator, you know, it was amazing. You know, finally using vector, you know, programs to do what we essentially had done before, which was all done by hand and things sent by fax department. And, you know, it was definitely, it's an interesting transitional period for sure. And there was a lot of people who, you know, it's like AI now, like, people are definitely afraid of new technology because sometimes you're like, oh, this is going to replace this. Everything's a tool, you know, everything's a way to get somewhere else and to improve the craft. And I think, you know, that's just been an ongoing thing. I mean, AI is really just another version of Photoshop, which was terrifying when that first came. You know, I think there's always going to be naysayers and like, it's got to be either one or the other. And I don't think it needs to be. I think there isn't a harmony that you can get to if you utilize the tools in a realistic way.
Yeah.
And don't rely on them too heavily. I think, you know, you always need to kind of keep your own sense of design ethos and not get too caught up in sort of the hype of like the brand new tool.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, everybody wants a good story. They want to feel connected to the design. The design is an extension of the story of the brand. And you have to feel something for the brand in order to want to buy the product. And so that's authenticity that you can't fake. And I think Saucony's been a really good brand for me because coming from a brand like Reebok that has also a really long history. I mean, if you look at both brands, turn of the century, like 1890s, like in a similar story. Mm-hmm. But their ability to sort of evolve over the past 125 years has been amazing because it's a brand that's, you know, started off in Cutstown, Pennsylvania, and the Crystal Cave shoe was actually part of that original story where
I'm still chasing that one. I'm still chasing that shoe for a price that's not going to break me.
I'll see what I can do. But yeah, you know, that was a story talking about Cutstown, Pennsylvania, and just sort of the town that the factory and the business was at. And I'm interested in sort of deep diving into personal histories of brands and just finding a way how people can connect, you know, like Crystal Cave. I mean, that's such a silly kind of idea that people would connect with it. But, you know, to me, it proved that people are interested in sort of off the beaten path, right? You don't have show the same brands with the same story, with the same low-hanging fruit that everybody kind of presents. You know, it's definitely something that I feel has been part of the success of Saucony in the past few years. When I originally started there, you know, I originally worked, my product line manager was Bima. So, we worked together early on. He was actually part of my hiring process. And like,
really? I did not know that.
Great guy. Like,
yeah, I love that guy.
We connected really well. And it was interesting. I just really felt sort of akin to what they were trying to do. Which was create kind of more of a connection between their lifestyle and their performance product because the designers they have there in performance are top notch. They've been there for, there's some real lifers there, but there's a reason why they've been there. You know, they're at the top of their craft and I think they've consistently done amazing product. And what my goal was 10 years ago was just to sort of bring a little bit of the knowledge that I had from working in classics and lifestyle for a long time. Because at Puma, I had done a lot of lifestyle for and performance for women's product.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I spent like 8 years essentially doing like performance women's shoes and lifestyle shoes. And so that was something I hadn't really done at Reebok as much.
Yeah.
So yeah, you bring a little bit of previous knowledge from other brands to, you know, your current job and hope that you can bring something to the table.
Yeah. And you said something earlier that really resonated with me because as we've been doing this, I mean, podcast for what, 6 years now is something that as you get from the other side of just a consumer, which I know consumers still care about, but into like diving into like the business aspects, the history, the low hanging fruit stories that we kind of get over and over again from other people. You guys at Saucony really do a great job at, like you say, pulling things that no one would think about from the Crystal Caves to like, hey, these are part of Pennsylvania. This is from where the company's founded. This is how it connects. And being able to do that is just, it gives people a refreshing take on product. And I think that's, you said it already. I think that's why Saucony has found this really just great identity. I mean, they've been around and been successful for, let's say, 100 years. Yeah. But I feel like now with people being so selective what they pick, I mean, there's so many different brands out there, so many different things to choose from. But this real big influx towards Saucony, I feels like, is because of that, is really earnest, really true to you guys' self when it comes to the stories you tell. And that's the reason why I always gravitated towards it because of that. It's something that is different, but it's something I can, you know, it's not too far off the beaten path where I can't associate with it, which I love that.
Yeah, you know, it's like the scrappy underdog, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a brand that's been around a really long time, but half the people I talk to don't even know how to pronounce the brand name. You know, so it's not like the Nike or the Adidas of the world where people are like, oh, okay, cool. You know, when I tell somebody where I work, they're like, they're running shoes. Like the second comment is like, it's a running brand. Like, you know, people remember the Jazz and people remember sort of like all the old school stuff growing up. You know, I'm a kid of the 90s and the 80s and I remember, you know, wearing that stuff when I was younger. All the Shadow 5000, the 6, you know, the tried and true classics. But yeah, you know, it's like I always make the joke that Saucony was like one of the oldest startups in the world. You know, we have that mentality of like being really scrappy and working with what we have. And, you know, we don't always have the biggest budget or we don't always have the biggest, you know, marketing plan to be able to get something out there. But I think we've stayed true to who we are. And I think we've been consistent. And I think the consumer looks at that and sees that, all right, maybe there is kind of like authenticity to like what they're trying to bring, you know, so because at the end of the day, the performance product is performance product, you know, and all of our classics and originals were performance products at one point. So I think even with our lifestyle product, we want to make sure it's as comfortable as it possibly can be. The materializations are as high quality as they can be. I mean, I will put any of our leathers or materials pound for pound against any of the bigger brands.
Easy. You guys crush a lot of bigger brands. I tell us like when I make reviews, I'll talk about the shoes. I'll break them down. And it's never a question. Anytime I open a pair of Sauconys and I can compare it to anything else I have in my collection, I can get a Saucony. Let's say I got the pink suede Shadow 6000. That is like some of the nicest suede I've ever seen in my life. And I got it for $120, $140. I go to something $200 from another brand. It's like, this is not even a comparison. You're blowing them out the water at a fraction of the price, which is insane.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, the design team really goes the extra step to like curate those kind of materials. But at the same time, we wouldn't be anything without our development team who really kills it in terms of being able to manufacture. And, you know, our FOBs are sometimes kind of high, and we find ways to cut corners and to like really bring the best possible quality. Because, I mean, for me, like, if you're going to spend, especially with, you know, tariffs are right now and sort of the uncertainty of, like, the cost of things, people forget how much things actually cost to make. And so, you know, if you're going to spend $175 on a pair of shoes, you want to make sure that people feel good about that.
Now, does it help that I know the parent company now is Wolverine? Does it help that because they're such a legacy brand in like leathers and suedes, do you guys source directly from them, or are you still required to go source from outside places as well?
So there's multiple vendors that we source materials like leathers and suedes out of, right? But as you may or may not know, Wolverine Suede was, you know, the subsidiary of Wolverine. New Balance purchased Wolverine Suede. But for many, many years, New Balance and other brands were using our suede from Wolverine.
So, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Shag suede and like a lot of these other suedes that are sort of mainstays in the industry were actually part of that company umbrella.
I learned something new today. I had no idea.
So, but yeah, there's plenty of companies out there that make, you know, quality leather and suede. And we're always just very careful about how to curate it, you know, and I think that's something I've been really focused on is, you know, not just the storytelling, but just sort of the indirect story based on like what materials you pick.
Yeah.
Because something like Crystal Caves or even the Gloa Constrictor, it needs to tell a story, even if you don't have the ability to tell the person what that shoe is about.
100% agree. And right? So I got one so I wish you could see my other side of the wall. It's like literally another bookshelf of just Sauconys. And one of my favorites that just, it's like you said, maybe you don't even like say anything about it, no marketing. You just put it out. The Patchwork Shadow 5000. This, did you do this one?
Well, that was a team effort. But yeah, I mean the different sort of whaling on each of those, the patterning. We worked actually with Foot Soldiers, some friends from Puma who had started a consultancy in the UK. Amazing group of people. They helped us with a couple of projects, and that was one of them. So absolutely an excellent shoe, probably a nightmare for development to make.
I can only imagine with everything going on. But it's one of those, like you said, it's telling the story without having to genuinely open your mouth. It's like, hey, Patchwork. People think of things like factory floor, things of that nature.
Right.
And it's just one of those that, okay, we don't really talk about. But I've noticed a lot of things at Saucony because, you know, what we do, we examine both retail and we examine the resale market. things like that patchwork, things I go back and look at, like even like the coffee, like the espresso, like the Shadow 6000 here, is things that people will buy. Again, it's not a bunch of like, oh, super crazy marketing. But after the fact, I will go look at some of the like the resale prices on these, Josh. It is absolutely insane because these things went on sale. You get them for like, you know, 70, 80, 90 bucks. And then now someone's like, oh, no, you didn't know? $500, $600 now. And like, that's that prime example of like that patchwork. I was just messing around. I was like, maybe I want to buy a second pair. And I was like, never mind. I'm just going to not wear this as much anymore because it's like 600 bucks. It's wow. insane. So yeah. People gravitate towards this stuff.
You look at the history of some of the, you know, we were known for food shoes for a while. That's something that we kind of play with here and there, not as much as we used to. You know, that coffee pack was definitely one that kind of touched upon that. I mean, I had done stuff like the ramen. I don't know if you saw the ramen shoe that we did.
I don't remember ramen. I remember avocado toast, of course, food fights, burgers.
Look up the ramen one and check out the packaging on that.
I got to see this. What model was it?
I'm trying to remember right now. It's been like 7 years since I did that one. But if you look up ramen Saucony, you'll see.
I think it's one I don't see. Was 8,500.
Yeah, 8,500.
Oh my goodness. That leather looks insane.
Yeah. So like the Jacquard embroidery that was on that was all custom. So kind of referencing like the Japanese like instant ramen packs.
That's
but
so
then
cool.
We did a large bag based on an actual packaging design that we altered.
Yeah, it's like crazy. The big red bag that has like the cooks in 3 minutes on.
Yep.
That's so cool. See, I love that kind of stuff, man. And it's just something off the wall, like something different. It's like, hey, it's food. Everyone can associate with food some way or form.
Right.
And it speaks to someone out there. And that's really cool that you guys really lean into not only the shoe, but hey, let's make the packaging something different. How does that typically work? I mean, I feel like that's kind of more the almost kind of like a nightmare side, getting the packaging right.
You know, it can be, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, I think a lot of our collab partners really lean into really great, you know, packaging concepts as well. I mean, you look at the burger shoe back in the day. I mean, that was like a high point for us in sort of the previous decade. I mean, the packaging is always fun. I mean, it's that added nice to have because it's a little gratuitous. Like, you don't have to have it, but like brands that go that extra mile to kind of bring that to fruition, I think, you know, really care about the consumer. So I have the most fun, honestly, with the packaging because it seems like an afterthought, but it's not. I mean, it's definitely, you know, doing the box and stuff like that. I mean, like, for me, like the iridescence of this and the simplicity of this is like sort of what's appealing in opening the box to me. You know, it's like the shoes are fun, but if they don't have sort of a, you know, a connection.
Yeah.
Reason for being. I mean, it's to me, it's like a missed opportunity.
It's experience, I feel like. I mean, because when you open a shoe, it is a full experience. In the box, the paper, extra laces. And again, you guys have really, I feel like, set the standard for that because everything, like I said, that's a GR. That's in line. You can go to the website and go grab a pair right now, which if you haven't, you should, because you killed it on that one too, man. Like, those are fantastic, all three of them. Everything. It doesn't have to be a collaboration. You guys really are giving you understand that people are spending hard-earned money on the product, and you're giving them something like, hey, this is what you're getting. You're getting the box. You're getting the experience. You're getting everything. And people want that. No matter, like, anybody you talk to, you'll get complaints. Oh, well, the shoe was cool, but I wish the box looked better. Because they want to show the box off. They want to put it somewhere. They want to, like, when they go find that shoe, it's like, oh, that's the different box. I can pull it out. And, I mean, even, like, I think of the Tortoise and the Hair pack. That one, I love it. I had Shadow 6000, the hair. I love that shoe. But everything from the furry laces that came with the bunny's tail to the box that has like the tortoise and the hare kind of like illustration on it. Just so much to it that makes it stand out. And I think that's just, people appreciate that.
I mean, that's a testament to our collab partners for sure. And we've always been, you know, very cognizant about aligning ourselves with other brands that have a very similar outlook or a similar desire to kind of tell those stories. So, you know, it's been so much fun working with those collab partners. Yeah. But I think at the same time, you know, we're just very careful about not relying 100% on collaborations yes. in order to bring even inline product that, mm-hmm. you know, resonates. You know, I think that's just something that as a smaller brand, we felt was necessary in order for us to compete with the bigger brands, obviously. You know, yeah. it's like the Nikes of the world, and I know plenty of people that work there, they have a lot of resources. They have a yeah. designer just for laces. They have a designer.
Oh, I mean, wow.
you have to keep in mind that a lot of these brands have, you know, dozens, if not 100 designers on staff, whereas, you know, we have 9.
I mean, wow.
You mean for originals, I mean, we rarely have ever had more than 2 or 3 people.
Okay.
When I started 10 years ago, it was just me. So you have to keep in mind that the amount of product that we put out versus the sort of the resources that we have. I mean, you have to put on a lot of hats.
Yeah. And
everybody on the team, everybody at Saucony puts on a lot of hats because they have to, you know, make up for maybe the lack of headcount.
Mm-hmm.
And the success we've had in the past couple of years has been amazing. We definitely have more people who have come on staff, amazing people. The design director that came on, Alyssa, who I've been working with for the past few years, is okay. phenomenal. We're finally getting to a place where we feel more comfortable to be able to expand mm-hmm. and to be able to bring more product to more retailers. So, I mean, you're definitely yeah. seeing Saucony in the marketplace a lot more than you used to.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, you know, a lot of the brands out there, the Foot Lockers, the Snipes, the, mm-hmm. you know, Journeys, whoever it is that we're now working with, we really yeah. didn't have that kind of relationship, at least in originals,
yeah.
In previous seasons. So I think it's something that we're very excited about. You know, you're optimistic, but you're still nervous. You want to be able to, like, you know, bring the same level of creativity to the marketplace and be able to expand. It's kind of a hard thing sometimes when brands yeah. become more successful. There's more pressure on them.
Yeah.
But I think we've done a good job of, you know, integrating both performance and lifestyle. You know, I think the Saucony ethos has been sort of like a one brand mentality and not just looking at it as a running brand, but there's other aspects that in people's lives that they can resonate with.
Yeah, no, I agree. You guys definitely, like, one of the things, like, I noticed when you talk about storefronts, my wife and I, back in May, we went to New York. So walking to the JD Sports in Times Square, which is ridiculously large. First thing I walked in front door, Saucony Omni 9s.
Omni 9, yep.
Right there, boom, as soon as you walk in, which, like you said, some years back, I even say, let's say 5 years back, you wouldn't have seen a Saucony in a front door. But now I'm walking to one of the biggest shoe stores in the world. It's right there front and center, man. Like getting eyes on it just like any other, like Jordan, Nike, which is amazing. And you telling me that you guys are doing this with like a head count of 9, like people listen to this. I need you guys to wrap your head around it, that keeping up with bigger brands and sense of popularity, giving them things they want in like colorways, stories with 9 people is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, from a design, you know, the design group, I mean, it's probably 9 or 10. I mean, probably forgetting 1 or 2 people. But it definitely was always shocking to me compared to the other brands that I was at, how small it was. And that was appealing because I realized pound for pound, the people that were working there were definitely hitting it out of the park. And so I learned a lot. I mean, you learn to be scrappy. You learn to kind of roll with insane deadlines. You're working on different seasons at once. I mean, it's a lot, you know,
yeah.
and everybody that's there, that we work with and, you know, the other arms of the originals team are, I mean, they're just phenomenal. You know, I've been working with Jason Faustino for years and he's probably
Jason.
Just one of the best in the industry. I mean, just, you know, he and I get along so well because we're both like film geeks and, you know, like we love these like hidden stories and all the stuff that goes into storytelling. You know,
yeah.
definitely pop culture is sort of our thing, you know, yeah. and if the consumer can like find a hidden detail that resonates with them and they're like, oh man, like I didn't even, and I love that, you know, I love being,
that's always fun, man.
I hide a little detail inside the tongue or the footbed or you know, just a little homage to something, you know, that's always satisfying to be able to get away with that, you know, and not a lot of brands are always willing, you know, to accommodate that kind of detail. So, you know, upper management has been really supportive and really sort of like, hey, we know that we're working, you know, against much larger companies, and how can we have a point of view that honestly just may go that little extra distance, you know, and it's those little details, they add up, you know. Yeah. I think that's something that, you know, kind of tells our story. So yeah, I've had such an amazing time working with my team and working with everybody that it doesn't feel like work. I mean, I say that, you know, I just got through like 8 hours on we're working on Autumn 27 right now.
Oh my God. We know ahead of the game.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be 18 months to 24 months sort of like ahead of the game sometimes, which is hard. You know, it's definitely hard for any brand to do that. So
for inspiration, like being able to have this kind of brain trust of like 9, 10, 11 people when it comes to these projects that we'll take collaborations out because I know those are typically like meeting of the minds between the partner and you guys. But let's talk about just your inline product that like the Gloa constrictors. Yeah. Where does that inspiration come from? Are you guys sitting there like, hey, we got You're the Snake, we've seen some other things come out, how can we be different? Or how are these ideas being like brought to fruition? Because again, you can tell, like you said earlier, it's like it didn't feel like work. You can tell the designs that you guys have, there's a joy in it compared to, hey, we gotta meet a deadline, let's move on. There's a lot of meaningful things, like say hidden things, that you guys truly can tell it was an enjoyable process for you guys. Like, what does that look like when you guys are brainstorming together?
You know, I think it's different for everybody. Specifically for this project, mm-hmm. this was in the past few years I've been doing Year Of, right? Yeah. So I've been focusing on like the Chinese zodiac, and mm-hmm. every once in a while I'll come up with something that like, hey, let's, you know, and Year of the Snake I knew was going to be big for everybody.
Yeah.
I think there's certain animals on the 12, you know, the 12-month cycle that are a little bit more exciting. You know,
yeah, like no one's happy about the rat.
Year
like,
the chicken, like, you're not coming from Year the Rat. Tiger, you know, Year the Tiger. Like, I had done a Year the Dragon one. Like, yeah. Those are the sexier storylines.
100% facts.
And so, you know, we did it late in the process. Like, these came out now towards the end of the year, and usually Year Of stuff comes out in January or February. So I had seen the Nike stuff. I had seen, like, really solid stories. And even sort of, you know, within our own brand, you know, we have a division that works out of China, and they had come up with a really
great
one as well. But I knew, you know, all right, what can I do? So what I end up doing is I end up going to the material library and I look for materials first. So for me, the inspiration comes from, all right, I found this really great, you know, multicolor leather mm-hmm. that's on the saddle. And then, you know, here's a synthetic in the toe that's, you know, reptile. And then, you know, we went through 3 or 4 ideations of trying to find a mesh that actually looked like scales.
Oh, so it's different, you know, than a...
And if you look at the laces also have almost kind of like a snake-like quality to them. Yeah. So there's a tonality that I look for. Like mm-hmm. I look for materials that look really great together and sure. then kind of work that way rather than drawing the shoe and going, all right, well, maybe if I can find this color in this material. Like I almost sometimes look for existing colors because then I can match them all together and see what they're going to look like before I even get the first round sample. Sometimes we don't have that luxury. But, you know, I worked with a synthetic vendor that we've worked with before, and I found this particular purple, and I found green, and then I found black, and I was like, all right, like, let's see what we can do with that.
That's cool. Okay.
Because I think there's, you know, there's 2 different ways that we approach story packs. Like the Saucony by Saucony stuff used to be individual mm-hmm. shoes.
Yeah.
But then it became more of a pack idea. And you can either go individual models where you go, all right, these 3 shoes will go great together because there may be somebody that doesn't like an Omni 9.
Yeah.
They may be more old school and want a Shadow 5000. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we do it in that way. But I felt doing three of the same in this particular case would have been the strongest story, because I wanted people to kind of like decide, all right, what's my favorite color here?
It's impossible, by the way. I keep looking at the website, I'm like, which one am I going to buy? I was like, haven't decided yet. I got to come back.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I couldn't decide. Like, I like the green. I like the purple. I like the black and the blue. Like,
all fantastic.
All for different reasons. But yeah, I mean, that's the fun part, right? Is like, it's sort of like a holiday when the samples finally come in from development. You get to look at the stuff and you get to see if you like succeeded or kind of failed at that point. And, you know, I think a lot of the times the materialization is sort of the unsung hero of design, especially with stuff when you're using existing heritage product. I mean, how do you make it compelling for somebody to want to buy that shoe again?
Sure. With this rise in the mesh runner becoming popular, that Y2K style shoe. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you guys feel about the mesh runners? That Omni 9 seems to have been the one that stood out amongst that and the Triumph 4, which, funny enough, I think I actually like the Triumph 4 a little bit better. But the Omni 9 stuck with the masses. Creating on that shoe, I mean, it has a great paneling. It has a lot of depth to it. Yep. Do you find yourself, is it easier for you and your team to create on that model with so many different layers and just things you can do with it?
Yeah, I mean, so my wife just left her pair of Triumphs in here. So I'm like, okay, I think each model has its own sort of personality. And I think, you know, sort of the technical aspect of this shoe is very different than the Omni 9 versus something like one of our newer models, like the Paramount.
Oh, that one's really cool.
Yeah, this is one that never made it, but as we definitely have been leaning more heavily into the retro tech trend. And I think the Omni 9 was one of the earliest that we had sort of brought back.
Yeah.
You know, 5, 6, 7 years ago when I was working with a different team, it was smaller and it was more sort of like, hey, we think this shoe is cool. Let's bring this back. You know, that's how we did like the Azora ST and the Azora 2000 and like, the Azora 2000 was like an Eric Smolin like pet project. Like, he was a PLM at the time and he was like, dude, I love this shoe so much. And it was so weird. There was a lot of strange outliers that had come out in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. You know, it's definitely part of our DNA, but like definitely doesn't look like anything else that was in the marketplace at the time. So, you know, it's fun to look in the archives. And I spent so many years like just buying, you know, I'm sure I was competing with some of the crazy Saucony shoe collectors out there on eBay all the time. I mean, like day and night, I would just be finding stuff that I was like, oh, all right, this is sick. We got to bring this back. And you just create an archive. And I ended up having like hundreds of shoes.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, which just brought in to our office. And eventually we just cataloged them all. And, you know, it definitely informs sort of our future by looking at our past. And I think that's something that every good brand needs to know.
Oh, yeah. Now, are you guys Saucony has a rich, like, heritage of sneakers out there. I'm sure there's a million things you guys have probably thought about bringing back, haven't brought it back yet. Are you guys going to lean more into, again, heritage models, some things that you want to bring back in, you know, for the moment? Or are you guys also looking at maybe creating some new silhouettes as well? And no specifics needed, just kind of trying to get your mindset.
Yeah, you know, and that's something that, as a brand, we have been in discussion about for a number of years. I mean, I think, you know, for example, we brought back this guy, you know, in the Trainer 80 and like the original Hornet and stuff like that. And when I was looking at this model as a bring back, I was like, look, we have a heritage that goes back quite a ways. And I was starting to see sort of the low profile trend coming back because everything was so stacked. Everything's cyclical, right? Like, you can't. I think the trend now is that there is no trend. I mean, I think things happen so quickly. It's impossible for any brand to sort of pinpoint when that's going to be. And so I think brands need to rely more on sort of their own personal story now rather than competing with other brands because, you know, you can all go to WGSN and figure out like what color is going to be trending that year and whatever. But every brand has a different heritage, right? Yeah. And so it's impossible to say, all right, it's going to be, you know, low profile for the next year. And then it's going to be, you know, I mean, nobody predicted Hoka. You know, nobody.
No, you're like 100% right there.
You know, nobody predicted On. Mm-hmm. Nobody predicted sort of what was going to happen when Adidas started coming out with their Samba. I mean, like, that was just sort of like the right place at the right time, and the right Kardashian happened to wear it, and like everybody was, oh man, I gotta get myself a pair of those. And but look, Samba's been around since I was a child. I mean, it's everything is cyclical. Everything is like based to me on where the zeitgeist is. Like when people decide something is right for them all around the same time, it kind of happens organically, and you can't force that. And brands that try to force that always fail.
Yeah. You know what? And it's crazy when you said it, because I feel like more in the present than ever before, it's kind of like the Wild West when it comes to footwear, because we can usually look and say, okay, this is when, you know, dunks were a thing. This is when retro, like 80s inspired running or 90s inspired running was a thing. But yeah, I mean, of course, the mesh runner's like a thing now. It's like Y2K style shoes, but that's just one subset. Really, you know, you look at the, you know, quote unquote sneakerhead, they're kind of fading away. And it's more like, what do I like as an individual? Which I love that, because that means everyone's putting out something different. I can go to each brand. It's like, hey, I love that they're doing this. Let me grab that. I love that these guys are doing this. And there's something for everybody. And it's not constricting people to say, I'm only going to design around this. And again, something you guys do a good job at is like, hey, great. We will give you the mesh runner, but we'll give you also a Shadow 6000. We're going to still do our performance like an Endorphin and then give you something cool with Minted with that. Like,
right.
There's so much that can be there. Or like the Jazz Court, you get like the old basketball style shoe. Like, there's a ton of things that you guys are putting out just to really appease anybody who wants to, like, their first step in a Saucony. They can open a door and say, there's something for me here.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Minted. Minted does an amazing job of curation. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
They're doing performance shoes, and they're also doing, you know, sort of their version of this was top notch. I mean, the Triumph 4 was a model that appealed to them. And I think, again, that's aligning yourself with sort of like-minded collab partners who have a similar affection for maybe underdog models. You know, it's, I think the era of sort of, I hate to say this, but like the era of hype beast sort of mentality is like, it's starting to fade a little bit.
Declining, hope gladly.
Or realizing that there's a bigger world out there.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think there's a place for everybody at the table, you know, and I think sort of the varied viewpoints and design aesthetics and, I mean, who would have thought that, like, you know, Crocs would have been sort of the juggernaut that they've become? And look, Steve Smith is like heading them up now. Like, it's
I never would have saw that coming in my life, by the way.
I kind of did, because like he's always ahead of the curve. And like he's like, I think I'm not speaking for Steve, because Steve is like on another level.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's somebody that I've known since I was 16 years old. And his move there like kind of made sense to me. I was like, wow, okay, so you're going to a really technical, interesting brand that has a lot of opportunity to expand in that space. And I'm kind of waiting to see what happens over the next few seasons when his influence
it's gonna be something nuts. it's gonna be something crazy.
Like, you're gonna see like crazy stuff, but that's exciting to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I expect that from Nike. I expect that from Adidas. Like, those brands are huge. I mean, they are just massive. And so when you see sort of great minds align themselves with brands that you didn't expect, I think almost more interesting things come out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. And so, I mean, to me, that's a great example. I mean, I'm excited to see what a lot of these other brands are doing. I mean, I've always looked even at like ASICS as like a North Star, because they have a long history and they've always done amazing collaborations and their taste level is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, I'm not competing with Nike. I'm competing with brands like that. I'm competing with brands that are maybe not niche, but like definitely in the grand scheme of things have maybe sort of a more specific following, you know, so for me, that's kind of exciting. I mean, I think there's a place for everybody.
Yeah. That's a great way to look at it, because I feel like your viewpoint of being able to appreciate what these brands are doing It's not just, ugh, I got to do something better than that. But you'll be able, you can take inspiration from anywhere. It's like, okay, I like what they did here. I think we have, you know, we can, you know, have that same train of thought, but maybe tweak it with our flavor or appreciate, like you say, with Steve Smith and the technical side of Croc. I mean, you guys aren't putting a Croc out, but you have things like the butterfly. That I think that was a fantastic shoe. Like that right. 2-in-1, or I guess you call it 3-in-1 because one could be a slipper, but that kind of foam shoe when those things were, well, they're still popular. I feel like I go to my kid's school and that's all I see is foam shoes now. But being able to appreciate it and like internalize it and say, hey, you know what? For our audience, we can do something with this type of inspiration as opposed to say, oh, I got to make the next Jordan 4 or I got to make the next blah, blah, blah. It's a good way to look at it because I think you can design more freely that way as opposed to being like, I got these blinders on. I got to beat them.
I think when you try to be adversarial, you've already failed, right? Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, you can't, in the world of social media, everybody's comparing with everybody else, right? Everybody's always like, hey, look at my life, look at my great existence. And I think it puts a lot of pressure on people. And I think you have to look at your own brand and say, what are my strengths and what are my weaknesses and what can I do to sort of, you know, expand and learn and still live in harmony with like everybody else. I mean, it's hard. I mean, look, it's an industry. It's at the end of the day, it's, you know, brands are making money, but I think there's a way to do it that, you know, you don't have to step on other people's shoes.
There you go. No pun intended.
But yeah, you know, like the butterfly was a project that Jason, you know, worked with an amazing collab partner on. And like the team really did a wonderful job. And I think it was one that was authentic to who we are. Yeah. We weren't trying to be Crocs. We weren't trying to be anybody else. We were just trying to do something that we thought was interesting for that particular time. And I think it resonated because of that.
And again, that just shows throughout you guys is what you're doing now, how your rollouts, the people you work with. I mean, the person, as people listening, if they don't know Saucony for anything else, I'm sure if I say, you know, the name Jay Tips, they're going to immediately know what I'm talking about. And what I've seen, just the events, the talks, the rollouts that Jason and Jay Tips have put on, you guys have designed some fantastic just out there models based on like what's in his mind. It's awesome because people, it's like, oh no, we don't want these bright colors. We don't want this anymore. We want, clearly, you guys can go against the grain and still have a shoe that people want because he's put out bright pinks and purples and everything you guys have done for him, everything has been a winner in some way or form. Somebody in there loved it, if not everybody.
That's, you know, that's a perfect example of when two groups of people come together and there is a synergy. Oh God, I hate that word, but there is a synergy.
That's such
like,
a corporate word.
That, I know. It's like friends coming together and having a conversation, right? Yeah. The best product happens out of the weirdest combinations of ideas. And I think Jay brought his pure brand to us. And I think we were open enough to be able to say, you know what? Like, this is maybe a pivot from an aesthetic principle.
Yeah.
But again, it wasn't because I think there was stuff that we were doing that definitely like parallel-wise made sense with that kind of collaboration. And his genius was just being who he is.
Yeah.
You know, and that confidence and that strength that he brought, you know, in Jason, they're very similar, you know, and their outlooks on things. And I think you can't fake that. You know, that's real. And like that sometimes changes the sort of paradigm of what's going on. You know, and I remember, you know, going to the footwear news, like, you know, the year that they collaboration of the year. And I'm like sitting there and like, you know, Ronnie from Kith is like over there and like people from Nike and like Jordan brand. And I'm like, oh my God, like we're like this small little brand in comparison to these guys.
It was perfect though. Cause like you said, like you're just perfect you embody him into that shoe and y'all were willing to do it, which not every brand's willing to do that. They want to still have their, hey, we're going to build a shoe and just put your name on it. It's fine. Go ahead. Well, we got you.
Yeah. But you know, everybody there was just amazing. And Jay and the team were just, it was that moment in time where I'm like realizing, okay, like we can sort of bring something to the table. We can bring a point of view and it really has to do with how authentic are the stories that we're bringing. And that's when we do our best.
Yep.
You know, be it inline, be it collaboration. I think that's the passion and the love that the team has and sort of the really, you know, Jason just does an amazing job with collab partners. I mean, it goes beyond sort of just like a typical Zoom meeting. You know, they're coming here in person. They're hanging out. They're really talking to each other. And I think it's that communication that is proven when you see the product.
I'm
super proud of like the team that I work with, and we just have an all-star group of people and the collab partners that we work with. And it's just, you know, I think we picked the right people and we picked the right positioning to be able to tell a good story. And that's really all it is at the end of the day.
I think so. I mean, of course, Jay, but also what we see you coming out with West Side Gun, the thing he's shown. But also, I think one that doesn't get talked about enough is Trinidad and his spot build.
Yep.
That is, do we see a Harris? Like, materials-wise, everything storytelling-wise, fantastic. And it's one of those ones, like you said, it's don't telling the true story. Like, I was, like, Trinidad was, like, nice enough to come on the show as well, and we got to talk about it. And from the orange to the WNBA logo to, the women let the basketball team on the back of the tongue, the hair clip. There's everything so intentional what you guys do with detail is, I think... If you haven't looked at Asakani, listening to this, if you haven't tried one on, or just go to their website. There's, you guys can go and now appreciate where it's coming from, because it is definitely something that is more of a labor of love, I feel like, as opposed to just a corporate like, hey, let's slap this color together and let's move along, because it is so much more than that that I feel like that you guys are really putting together there.
Yeah, Trinidad is such a pleasure to work with and has such passion and such vision. Are the spot built models the most popular models from us? No, but they're ones that we felt strongly about. It's a part of our history. It's a part of who we are. He recognized that, and every detail that he and his team brought to these stories are evident. You know, that's still one of my favorite shoes, and it's, you know, one that I hope we can return to potentially in terms of models. But I mean, you know, it's an uphill battle always doing stuff outside of the running category, you know.
People expect one thing, you take that, right. You zig instead of zag, it's like, wait, how's it gonna do? But it is one of those where I think that, again, is it appreciated, even maybe it's in the long run, but people come back to these things, people will enjoy like you said, going back into the vault, like, oh, I didn't know this existed. And I think you guys have a really great, just that ability to have that heritage product and people can, you know, refer back to later. But I got to ask you, before we finish, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your favorite project that you've worked on? I know it's probably like picking from your favorite kid.
I mean, you're talking like 10 years.
No, I was like, I'm giving you a lot to work with here. Okay, let's say favorite project, let's shorten it up. Let's say over the past like 2 or 3 years to make it a little easier for you to pick from.
All right. I mean, so. Obviously, Crystal Caves was, for me, kind of a turning point.
Yeah.
And it was just because the reaction to it was so strong. I mean, I remember, you know, we had done a collaboration with Ronnie and Kith from years before. Eric had done something with Ronnie with the Grid Web, you know, which was another shoe that was sort of this unsung, trusting statement product that we had done, and we had done a three colorway collab with him. And that was, for me, that was exciting. When Crystal Caves had come out, and Kith had decided, hey, we want to re-anniversary this shoe and carry it exclusively later on, that was like a real proud point for me.
They did do that. I forgot.
I had just visited their main, you know, New York City store, and just walking through there and the curation and just sort of how beautiful that space was. And then suddenly seeing the Crystal Caves like on that wall. Yeah. And it was kind of a turning point for me, because I was like, wow, like we're organically getting adopted by these amazing brands that are starting to see what we're bringing to the table. Selfishly, like that was kind of a high point for me. I remember telling my wife, damn, look at that. Like, they're carrying the shoe. Like, that's really cool.
That's cool.
And so for me, you know, it started off as a Saucony by Saucony three shoe pack, but then sort of rocketed into this place where people are like starting to use Crystal Caves as like, oh, we have to Crystal Caves that. Like, it was like, what? Like,
Like, yeah, it just took a life of his own. Like, I remember when that shoe came out, everyone was like, is that a collaboration? I'm like, no, that is straight. That is all Saucony on that one. And that's when people realize that, oh, okay, they're not playing around out there.
Yeah. And so I think for me, that was sort of the pivot point of like, okay, like, what can we do now to kind of, you know, continue that legacy and continue mm-hmm. that level of curated materialization. And like, you know, for me, the Glow Constrictor was kind of like that part two to that, right? Like, okay. I was like, all right, what can I do to like make something again so it doesn't look like a one hit wonder? And like, yeah. And now we're kind of being known for that. And the whole team is like, you know, busting their ass, like doing stuff that is some really beautiful product. And like, some of the best stuff that we've done is not even out yet. I'll be honest, I'm looking at the stuff for the past three seasons that we're working on, and like, you know, people on our team, you know, Alyssa and Isaac and Jack and all the guys that I work with, I mean, they're really killing it. And like, I'm proud because it's like keeping me on my toes, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been in this industry 30 years and I'm like working with these young designers who are like, whoa, like, it's like we're all coming to the same point. And yeah. we're all realizing what the story is that we need to tell. And I'm excited about the stuff that's coming out in 26 and 27, you know? So,
man,
maybe we'll be talking about that.
Who do I call just to get a membership? I need an ACA. Just pull it directly from my account. Just send them over. Like, charge me and send them over. But when you talk about another project that I think that it kind of went, it didn't get as crazy as, of course, the Crystal K's. And I'll drop this in my head. But I think this one was so solid. That the moon phase?
Yeah.
I love this one.
So, yeah, I mean, that was another one where I was just kind of like, all right, again, where can we... I almost forgot about that pack, but yeah, that's one of my favorite colorways, and that wasn't that much later than after Crystal Cave. So that was like, all right, can I do a pack that like tells this interesting story with equinoxes and like all this other stuff, you know? And so I like interesting stories like that. And we were able to, you know, to do some on that. And I thought the Triumph 4 in that pack actually was pretty solid too.
Yeah. I mean, the Shadow as well. Like the entire pack was extremely like, well done. And I love, like, again, you did different things. Like this mesh has that kind of metallic tighter knit mesh behind it.
Yep.
The rope laces are like fantastic touch. And then the cage is like this iridescent type with a little bit of suede caging on the back. I mean, it's all just that mixture of materials was so nice.
Well, look, you know, that pack would not have been successful without the Mandinos. Like a lot of the guys in that team were like, oh, dude, that's sick. Like that looks really great. And they took it out there. And really, I mean, the past years that we've been working with them have been amazing. Like what they've been able to do for us at, you know, Paris Fashion Week and get us into doors that we haven't been able to get into. I mean, that is like an unsung heroic journey that they've like, it's relationships, right? Like you have to trust each other and you have to be able to work with people who are like-minded. And we've just had such an amazing relationship with those guys. So, you know, you can make the best product in the world, but if it doesn't get out there,
doesn't matter.
You know,
so, I love that you mentioned Paris Fashion Week. What you guys are doing out there the last few years is awesome. Like, it's almost like this disruptive thing because you guys have your own like pop ups and you're doing your own things, and of course, revealing shoes. I literally when you see Paris Fashion Week, you're like, all right, what shoe sock are you about to unveil? Because it's turning into. I feel like it used to be like Nike NBA All Star was like the shoe moment of the year. I feel like it's transitioned to Paris Fashion Week now because there's so much that, you know, has been doing activations, and it's not just basketball sneakers now. Now we're getting everything, which includes what you guys do. And again, from the Run Club you guys do to with BMO, you guys had the round table.
That was great, right?
Yeah. I mean,
he killed it.
Oh, he's so good at that. Like, he's so good at, like, that
MC. But he knows our brand so well because he was part of it. You know what I mean? Like, that was... I remember his influence on me was so early in the process because I had gone to Louisiana, you know, his home of homes, and like and then worked on a pack that was completely based on sort of the old Victorian houses that were out there. I had done like a three pack, and it was totally based on my conversation with him, where to go.
Wow.
You know, and so like, again, it's just those organic conversations that happen and like those relationships, the result of it. I mean, it's awesome. Everybody on our team just loves what they do. And, you know, like Dave Corey, who's our new, head of product, unbelievable, such experience and gravitas from like years and years of product creation and working with different brands. And, you know, we're really able to finally kind of sit at the big table, you know, and like, and really show people what we're able to do. And I think I've just been amazed and humbled by the fact that the response has been as positive and it, you know, talking to you and talking to other podcasts and just kind of being like, wow, okay. Like, you know, I'm sort of in the later years of my career and I've never seen such like positive response to these stories that we're all trying to bring.
Yeah. Well, you guys are killing it, man. Like, pat yourself on the back. You guys are really doing a heck of a job out there. And people, it's not one of those like, oh yeah, there's this cult following. I think everyone notices now is, hey, they're really on top of, you know, their game, in the lack of better words, man. I'm a fan. I talk to, when it comes to this sneaker world, our fans, like, everyone's excited to see what you guys do next. People didn't know about you guys, still can't figure out how to say your name, apparently, but we're going to get them there. We're going to figure out Saucony. We're going to get them there. But they're excited too, even just being introduced to the product. So, Josh, I appreciate you coming on, man. I don't know if there's anything that you can divulge that you want people to look out for, anything new that you say, hey, keep an eye on, we're going to do something for.
You know, it's hard to pick. I would just say keep an eye on spring and autumn 26.
Okay.
And also 27. I mean, there's, I would say the strongest season we have that I've seen so far has been in 27 and the stuff that everybody's bringing to the table. So it's a testament to our development, our product line management, everybody that's working together. It's super exciting to see. Yeah. So I appreciate you having me on.
Man.
I've been talking way too long and thanks for letting me ramble.
Heck, man, look, selfishly speaking, I could talk to you all day because this is, I love it, man. This has been a great conversation and I appreciate your time, man. I know you're busy out there. But let the people know how to find you, man.
So on Instagram, I'm Kodowar, KODOWAR. I have a few different handles because I've been working on a Japanese toy documentary called Mint in Box.
I saw that. I was going to ask you about
there's
that.
There's a link. There's a link there. Yeah, dude, I'm a weirdo.
Oh, I can't. I like, do you see? Look at this behind me. I can't talk. There's more we can't see.
Shoes, toys, watches, yeah,
comments,
whatever.
Say
collectors are collectors, right?
Hey, what you need, I got you. Like, we could collect all
things. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I appreciate it again. I love having these conversations, not just like, oh, look, purely like we're talking about just the shoe, what we see face value, but the behind the scenes. I love these conversations, man. And I appreciate the time. And everyone, go listen, go follow Josh. Go take a look. Again, if you haven't taken a look at Saucony, do yourself a favor. I'm sure something there will interest you because they're doing some great things there. And make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us as well, Sneaker History. And until next time, guys, see ya.
Thanks.
Hey, y'all. Nick here. One more thing before you take off. Do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you. And we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.